All right, so we're back. On the line with me right now is Eric Desenhall. He's the founder and CEO of Desenhall Resources, a Washington, D.C.-based strategic communications firm, and the author of several books on crisis management. His latest, Glassjaw, a manifesto for defending fragile reputations in an age of instant scandal, came out last year in October, and it explores how once powerful people, organizations, and brands are easily brought down by seemingly powerless forces through the media and internet, which feed almost exclusively on destructive information. The book highlights new, often counterintuitive strategies for fighting back. Eric's on the faculty of Georgetown University's McDonough School of Business, where he teaches a course on crisis management and marketplace defense to MBA students. He's taught at the American Bar Association's continuing legal education programs on subjects including securities fraud litigation and managing high-profile trials. He's also lectured at graduate and undergraduate programs at institutions including Georgetown, New York University, Dartmouth, and the University of Maryland, in addition to the United States Army and Federal Bureau of Investigation. Welcome to the show, Eric. It's great to have you.
Hey there, Rachel.
So I want to talk to you about your new book, Glassjaw, and it's an art of war guide to modern crisis management. And it refers in the title to this Glassjaw, the fighter who can't take a punch in the ring. Now, what do you talk about in that book that relates specifically to some cases that we've seen in the media? What's kind of the big example that you like to talk about?
Well, Glassjaw, as you said, it's basically a term that describes a tough-looking fighter who can't take a hit. And time and time again, we see organizations like Toyota or Susan Komen or Penn State and Target. With their data hack, we see with great speed organizations and individuals who are thought of as being powerful who are brought down very quickly, seemingly out of nowhere. And in Glassjaw, I refer to this as the fiasco vortex. And the fiasco vortex is basically a runaway story. It's a story like what happened to Brian Williams or what happened at UVA with the Rolling Stone story, a story that just comes rocketing out of control before anybody can do anything about it. And a lot of what the spin industry sells is, well, if you hire me, I have very clever ways to deal with this. We could use social media, we could do this, we can do that. And a lot of what I talk about in the book is that a lot of the spin industry is quite a swindle. the things that you see happening on TV shows like Scandal make for wonderful TV. But at the end of a show like Scandal, Kerry Washington will say something like, "It's handled." And in real life, in my work, nothing is handled. It's very, very difficult.
Yeah, and a lot of people seem to think that social media is the answer to all of this. And that there are a lot of social media strategists out there. And I'm kind of old school in the sense that I still think that it's traditional media that gets ultimately diffused into social media that serves a client's purpose better. What's your school of thought on that?
I think social media is a dispersive technology. Crisis management is a containment discipline. And so, a lot of what social media is doing is disseminating. It's sort of like taking a feathered pillow on the top of a building and slicing it open in a windstorm and waving the feathers all around. A lot of what my job is to go and collect the feathers. And, it's a lot easier to switch my metaphors here to light a forest fire than it is to put one out. So social media, when it comes to crisis management, is a massive net negative. It doesn't mean that if you are trying to sell a book or if you are trying to sell a product or a political candidate that you don't use it to disperse. But the problem is when people and organizations have attempted to use social media to quell a crisis, 9 times out of 10, it makes it a lot worse. And one of the things that I talk about in Glassjaw is you have these three variables now that you didn't used to have. You have velocity, the amount of information. You have volume. You have velocity, rather, the speed of information. You have volume. You have the amount of information that you see on Twitter. And then you have venom. And venom is basically the negativity is what conducts online. The idea that a person did not do what they were accused of is simply not a resonant thing as much as we don't really seem to care about the negative allegations, if they're true or not. We just want to traffic in them. And that's what makes the crisis management climate so difficult. So what you often see is it takes a little while to get at the truth. I mean, you see the Rolling Stone UVA case where you had a dean who was smeared by Rolling Stone as if she had been insensitive to the plight of students that had sexual assault allegations. And, you know, slowly but surely somebody does their homework and it turns out that the story is wrong.
Right. Now, did they handle that properly, Rolling Stone?
Well, Rolling Stone, I mean, they did what they had to do. They did an investigation and they announced that that it was flawed. I mean, now they retracted the story, but right now, a couple of days ago, the dean just because you retract something, it doesn't mean that the damage is undone. The dean who felt that she was libeled filed the defamation suit, and that's going to take a while to play out. So just because you apologize, I mean, the PR industry loves the idea that if you just apologize and tell the truth, right, everything goes away. I just see no evidence in the 30-some years I've been doing this that's true at all. Often it just is the beginning of your problems.
Right. I mean, I tend to think that the general formula that I mostly see when dealing with crisis communications, for example, the JetBlue fiasco where there are some issues with planes and the CEO had to go on and do the whole round of the press and talk about what was going on, what he was going to do. In general, the attitude was apologize, say we're taking action, and we're available to talk. That, you know, here's how you can reach us. Those are kind of the three prongs of the message that he just kept repeating. And that's generally, I would say, most communications people would consider that a pretty good strategy. How would you rate that type of messaging?
Well, I think David Neeleman, when just so your listeners understand, JetBlue a few years back had thousands of cancellations in one day due to a snowstorm, and the CEO David Neeleman went on TV and other environments, and he apologized. And I think that he was a terrific spokesman. The thing, but here's the coda to that story: he lost his job. And one of the jokes the sort of gross, sicko black humor jokes we make in our office is whoever goes gets fired. Because one of the things about the fiasco vortex is you now have this, you know, just like we watch the finale to Mad Men at the same time we watch Twitter and you can't separate the two, what happens is whenever there is a crisis, you have social media going, which always, and I mean always, declares the crisis to have been mismanaged. And the only people who get invited onto TV shows to pundit are people who will declare the crisis to have been mismanaged and the CEO has to be fired. I mean, I used to do a lot of media appearances than I do now, largely because I don't want to be somebody who validates a company or individual's problem just because the TV station or the cable station wants an expert to opine that Paula Deen needs to be fired. The CEO of Target needs to be fired. I don't necessarily believe that's true.
No, I know what you mean. And one of the big crises that we've seen in the corporate world recently was the Sony breach, when that movie dealing with North Korean dictator faced a whole bunch of hacking. There's some hacking incidents around that, or I don't know if they actually were hacks. It could have been an internal breach. And a bunch of stars' emails ended up being dumped, and executive emails were dumped all over the internet. Now, do you think they handled it correctly, Sony?
Well, yes, but I think that handling it, I mean, it's not like a company in crisis gets together and they go, hey, everybody, you know, we could handle this well or we could handle it poorly. Which shall we do? Well, you know, I think we should handle it poorly. Okay, let's go with that. So you have to understand that organizations under attack are in a very difficult situation. And look, the fact is we're now a few months away downstream from the Sony hack, and things have gotten back to business. And the goal of crisis management is to get back to business. It's not the goal being Rachel and Eric get on a radio show and talk about how wonderfully it was handled. Because I have to tell you, you know, I look at the cases I get, and if you measure success by whether or not the pundits think it's handled well, you're going to slit your own throat. But, you know, I measure success. Do you get back to business? And how quickly are you able to get back to business? I mean, Toyota, when they had their recall a few years ago, people were saying, well, can Toyota survive? And you had experts getting on TV and saying, I don't know, this is a very bad thing for Toyota. Well, yeah, but the year later, sales were up 73%. So I would declare that to have been great crisis management.
Right, and I agree with you on that. But do you think shareholders are looking for that, or do you think shareholders are looking for a sign that the public is okay with how it's been handled? Or what do you think? Because ultimately, that's who your boss is, right?
Well, you know, you bring out an important point, which is that there are multiple audiences. I mean, one of the reasons you see companies take out ads about that are basically self-congratulatory is those type of ad image ads are helpful to shareholders and employees. They don't necessarily convince the general public of anything. So that's one of the reasons why you do that. But I think that that shareholders and employees are generally confused about how to calibrate successful crisis management. They want, a lot of times, they believe PR 101, that a victory is that the CEO gets on TV and admits to absolutely everything he or she's accused of. They think that's good crisis management. Well, no, it's not, because if you begin admitting to things you did not do, that might make some business school professors happy, but it's going to cause legal problems that could last for decades. So you really have to be smart about it. That's why Mary Barra, the CEO of General Motors, when they were trying to get her under oath to admit that the company knowingly made products that killed people, that is not what she admitted to. They tried repeatedly to get her to say, yes, I'd like to apologize for that. What she apologized for was letting down consumers, which is very different from apologizing for, yes, we made defective products. And by the way, we went into a room one day and we said, let's make some defective products that hurt people. And then we gave each other high fives. I mean, that's not what happened, and that's not what she admitted to.
Right. Now, another big case that happened last summer was the hacking of, I guess, something to do with Apple's service that resulted in a bunch of celebrities' very intimate photographs being put out there on the internet through various channels. And what was interesting to me about that is you had some celebrities that didn't say anything. You had others that spoke out in a very measured tone. You could tell that they were being advised. And then there are others who just didn't seem to care and played it off and just kind of joked about it. And they seemed almost inoculated against it. How do you decide if that happens to the average person out there and you find yourself in a situation like this, or if you're a celebrity, how do you decide how to react to it publicly, if at all?
A lot of it has to do with context. I mean, if you are Jennifer Lawrence or Kate Upton, who had photos hacked, I am not sure that even though I am not sure that that is truly a crisis for them, because when you are, you could even argue it's a brand extension. And I think, you know, it's sort of like whenever Paris Hilton or Lindsay Lohan drives into a tree, somebody, you know, will say, well, how can they handle this crisis? Well, that's not a really a crisis. That's what celebrities do. So I think that the question is who has the crisis? I don't believe that Jennifer Lawrence and Kate Upton may or may not be upset about it. I tend to think Hollywood people who take photographs of themselves and put them anywhere, it is questionable how committed to privacy they truly are, opposed to if Rachel or Eric go to a doctor and have medical tests, do we really want, we did not proactively put our X-ray or our psychotherapist's files on the internet, you know? And so I think that for the average person, this privacy issue is much more serious. I mean, the average crisis of yesteryear was a product recall. Now so many of them have to do with data.
Hacking.
Yeah. I had a friend a few days ago whose personal financial accounts were hacked, and that's something that the rest of us can relate to, as opposed to doing what Anthony Weiner did. A lot of us go, well, you know, it's one thing if you're hacking private onto our computers where we have an expectation of privacy. It's another thing if you, of your own volition, are taking photographs of yourself and tweeting them. Not easy to sympathize with.
Yeah, it's true. The other thing you mentioned in your book is the crisis is not an opportunity. What do you mean by that?
Well, I talk about that a lot in Glassjaw, that the crisis management industry is really kind of governed by these really insipid cliches. You know, if Nixon had just said he screwed up, the whole thing would have gone away. Not true.
Yeah.
It's cover-up
right.
that gets you. Not true. There are plenty of cover-ups that work perfectly well and are perfectly legal. But I think that one of the things that the PR industry sells, which is very dangerous, is that a crisis is an opportunity. If you got the cases I get, which are, I mean, the dumpster fires, the nuclear winters, the ugliest things you can imagine, it is not only not an opportunity, it's a potential disaster. And that's why your goal, you know, the idea that, you know, if you're given lemonade, you make lemon, if you're given lemons, you make lemonade. No, I mean, the goal in crisis management is to survive the mugging. It, rarely can you turn it into a positive. I mean, certainly we all can point to the person who had a heart attack and then took care of themselves and then lived to be 104. But that's we only hear the happy stories. We only hear Steve Jobs who got fired but came back and built a company stronger than ever. We don't hear about all the people who got fired and went to oblivion. And I think companies have to, and individuals under attack, have to be very, very realistic and vigilant about what the real objectives are. If you're Toyota, your job is to get back to making and selling cars.
Can you think of an example of a really, really well done crisis campaign or crisis instance?
Well, you know, I come back to Toyota because I think that with Toyota, what they did was very interesting. They, you know, you hear the phrase preach to the choir as if that's a negative. Toyota recognized very quickly that they were not going to win the farce that was in the news media, but they could win with their own customers. And one of the sad things about the Toyota crisis is I did a talk a few months after that happened, and I asked people in the audience, how many of you are aware of the Toyota recalls? And virtually every hand went up, and I asked them, how many people here are aware that Toyota was vindicated of charges of sudden acceleration by NASA, and two hands out of 200 went up.
And so
the question became, should Toyota run around doing ads saying we were vindicated, which just serves to bring the crisis back into the news? Rather, what they was they boosted their credibility and their relationship with their core customers. And, you know, to me, the best managed crises are the ones that never become crisis management case studies. I look at Bill Clinton's survival.
I was just going to say.
Phenomenal crisis management.
One
of the lies about Bill Clinton's crisis management, well, as he apologized to the public and the public, you know, forgave him. That's not what happened. Number one, he lied. Number two, he stonewalled. Number three, he said we must stop the politics of personal destruction out of one corner of his mouth, and out of the other corner of his mouth, he called in his top aides and he said, these Republicans in Congress, I want you to kill them. Republicans in Congress were exposed for their own sexual peccadilloes, and once the Republicans were neutralized and embarrassed by that, then he apologized. It's a lot more complicated than, well, you know, Bill Clinton fessed up and the public forgave him. That's not an accurate depiction of what happened.
He played offense and defense. He did it kind of in both senses. What do you think of his recent handling of the accusations around his foundation related to some wheeling and dealing?
I'm fascinated by them because I don't believe the public cares. I, I think I think Peggy Noonan had it right. I think we are so used to hearing about Clinton scandals that we don't know the difference between, you know, Whitewater and the Arkansas Project. And I think that this helps Hillary Clinton? No. I think it certainly weighs her down to some degree, but I don't think it's going to be her undoing, because I just think that the Clintons have a Teflon component. And the other thing they have going for them is, even though I don't think that the media love Hillary the way they do Barack Obama, I do believe that one of the things the Clintons have going for them is, all you need to do is shout right-wing dirty tricks, and the media will run with that story.
Right. I find her campaign strategy so far of not really saying much to the press or making herself seen in the press is just very interesting. She seems to be talking directly to audiences that she's in front of without actually answering press questions. I think, to me, that seems like a smart strategy.
I think she's a smart lady, and I think her people are smart. And I think that they're also smart enough to know that the concept that if she goes out there and hits these issues head on, that will make people say, oh, wow, how forthcoming. They know that that is simply a canard of crisis management. They know it doesn't work that way. And I think that I wrote a piece a couple weeks ago on the Huffington Post about Hillary Clinton and the virtues of boring crisis management, and the virtues of just slugging it out and slogging it through and not doing anything dramatic. I think that's what she's doing. And she also recognizes that if you come out and begin answering questions in detail when you have bad facts, that doesn't help. I mean, that doesn't help you. One of the things I hear all the time in my client work is, a new client will always say, we have to tell our side of the story, and everybody around the table thinks that's the most brilliant thing they ever heard. Well, what if your side of the story is, you know that stuff I've been accused of? Not only did I do that, but wait till you see the stuff that I did that nobody knows about yet.
Right.
And so, you know, tell your side of the story is dependent upon what your side of the story is. And the Clintons don't really have a good side of the story. So why would you celebrate it?
Yeah. No, that's fascinating. Eric Desnall, thank you so much for your time today. Really interesting discussion.
Always.
And your book, Glassjaw, A Manifesto for Defending Fragile Reputations in an Age of Instant Scandal. It's published by 12 Books, and it's available through all the usual channels. Is there a website they can find it too?
www.dezbooks.net, and it's on Amazon, and you just put Glassjaw and my name in, you'll find it.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rachel.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, so that's it for the show tonight, or today, wherever in the world you might happen to be. I'm Rachel Marsden. We'll be back again, same time and place, 7 p.m. Eastern, next Tuesday. In the meantime, remember, intelligence is a weapon, so be sure to use it. Goodbye.